This is the 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. Medicaid is the government program meant to help people who are poor, elderly, and disabled get access to health care. It was one of the centerpiece programs of LBJ's Great Society and is considered one of the relative success stories in the war on poverty. But for people on Medicaid, it's the difference between being able to see a doctor and suffering without. But that said, it's not an unqualified success. Medicaid doesn't do much good if you can't find a healthcare provider who will accept it as a form of insurance. A team of researchers at the University of Chicago recently looked at the way issues with Medicaid's reimbursement for doctors has affected patients who are on Medicaid, mainly how it affects their ability to access care. Because the process of getting reimbursement is so time-consuming, some healthcare providers just don't take patients who are on Medicaid. To talk more about this, we're joined by Joshua Gottlieb. He's an associate professor at the University of Chicago's Harris School of Public Policy. He's also co-author on the study. Professor Gottlieb, welcome to the 21st.
Thanks for having me.
We're also joined by Dr. Albert Huang, who's an internal medicine specialist and a professor of medicine and public health sciences, also at the University of Chicago. Dr. Huang, welcome to the 21st to you as well.
Thank you for having me.
And we're also joined finally by Rebecca Austin, who's a mom from Central Illinois. Some of her children use Medicaid as their form of health insurance. Rebecca, thank you for being here as well.
Thank you for having me.
And listeners, we always, as always, want to invite you to join our conversation at 800-222-9455, especially if you have experience with Medicaid, either as a patient, a parent, a physician, a nurse, some other healthcare provider. We'd love to hear your experiences at 800-222-9455. That's 800-222-9455. So, Dr. Huang, I'd like to start with you. Can you talk about your patient population at the University of Chicago and what your experience has been serving families who are on the Medicaid program?
Of course. University of Chicago is located on the south side of Chicago. So not surprisingly, I'd say 80% of the patients I see are African-American, and in terms of the makeup of payer mix, there's a large fraction that are on Medicare. And then inside the hospital, of course, we have a large fraction that are on Medicaid. University of Chicago, I think among academic medical centers across the country, has one of the highest rates of Medicaid penetration, I think up to 25%. The payer mix reflects our community and the patients that we serve.
And I mean, I guess from a teaching hospital standpoint, not to be too, this is something I know my wife is works with Medicaid patients in a different part of Illinois. There are advantages from a teaching standpoint, right? It's a patient population that sometimes has a little more complex health issues, as we've been talking about for a year and a half now with COVID-19.
Well, yes. That is certainly one positive way to look at things. Certainly especially in the hospital, I was just in the hospital in late July, people with untreated disease who don't have health insurance or stable health insurance, there's a great deal of opportunity to help those people with medical services. And many of these people have Medicaid as well. So, for many people who are trainees, safety net hospitals or county hospitals. I actually trained in a county hospital when I was a resident. Sometimes you saw the most medicine when you were in those settings. So it's both positive, but it's also a reflection of kind of social needs of people, which is at times also saddening.
Sure, absolutely. And I just trying to paint a picture there, set sort of a baseline for us. So, Rebecca, I want to bring you into the conversation. Several of your children, I understand, were adopted, and the state of Illinois promises to provide health care for children who have been adopted through Medicaid and foster children as well. What kinds of issues, though, have you run into trying to get care for your kids?
Thank you. A couple of the big issues. One has been doctors who will take the Medicaid, meaning that I've got some children with special needs, one, for instance, who has epilepsy and has to be seen by a specialist, and trying to get that coverage has been a difficult challenge. On the other side of that too has been medicine, trying to get certain medicines covered. And sometimes it's just a common ADHD medicine, not even a special medicine, to the point even that we've had specialty medicines that we're struggling to get covered. The biggest thing that we're always told is that medicine is covered at the discretion of, for instance, DCFS or whoever the child is under. And if a doctor is prescribing that, that doesn't necessarily always mean that they're going to cover it. We had a situation with my most recent adopted child who was having some major depression issues based on her situation. And Medicaid was refusing to cover the medicine because of her age. She was 15, and they felt that there was other ways to deal with it. And we had gone down other avenues to try to deal with the depression, and the doctor felt that the medicine was the best. And eventually, with lots of phone calls, lots of tears, we eventually got it covered, and it has made a huge difference for her. She needed that medicine to help calm her. But the struggles are almost daily. I had an issue this morning with trying to get a medicine covered, and it's, well, we have to get pre-authorization, and you wait and you wait and you wait. We had an incident where we waited a month for a seizure medicine to be covered that my daughter had to have because of her epilepsy.
Okay. So thank you for sharing that with us. That's the sort of patient perspective. And Professor Gottlieb, I want to bring you into the conversation now, because you co-wrote a study that looked at the administrative burdens that doctors face in dealing with Medicaid. What were your findings there?
Our findings there were, first, that these burdens seem to be much higher when dealing with Medicaid compared with other types of insurance. And second, that they're an important factor in doctors' decisions of whether to accept Medicaid patients, whether to treat Medicaid patients and accept Medicaid insurance. And it makes perfect sense, right? If you have to, as a doctor, yourself, or have your office go through all of this burden that Rebecca was just talking about, constant calls and haggling over getting paid, then it makes the insurance effectively less remunerative and more costly for you to deal with. So it makes perfect sense that they would say, well, we just aren't going to deal with that, especially since Medicaid is already starting out by paying lower reimbursements than Medicare or private insurance. So you start with the lower reimbursements, you add on the costs and complexity of these interactions, and it's just not worth as many doctors' while to accept Medicaid.
All right, we need to take a break here. We're going to continue this conversation. We've got our baseline set. We're going to dig into some of the findings of this study and talk about Dr. Huang's experiences with Medicaid and hear more from Rebecca Austin as well. If you're just joining us, this is the 21st. Again, we're talking about a new study that looked at the administrative burdens, particularly on healthcare providers in dealing with Medicaid, which is the government-run health insurance program serving people who are lower income, elderly, disabled, that sort of thing. We're speaking with Albert Huang, who's a physician and professor of medicine and public health sciences at the University of Chicago, Joshua Gottlieb, associate professor at the Harris School of Public Policy, also at UChicago, who's one of the co-authors of the study, and Rebecca Austin, a mom from Central Illinois, who has several children who use Medicaid as their form of health insurance. Listeners, we'd love to hear from you about your experiences with this. 800-222-9455 is the number. If you've ever had to navigate the bureaucracy around Medicaid, 800-222-9455. More to come on the 21st after a short break. Stay with us. This is the 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. We're speaking about Medicaid, the government health insurance program for people who are elderly, disabled, or lower income. We're speaking about it with, and specifically about a recent study that looked at the administrative burdens that doctors face when taking patients who are on the Medicaid program, trying to get reimbursed for it, and how that can affect patients and their ability to access healthcare through the Medicaid program. We're speaking with one of the co-authors of that study, Professor Joshua Gottlieb from the University of Chicago. We're also speaking with Dr. Albert Huang, also at the University of Chicago, a physician there, professor of medicine and public health sciences. And we're also speaking with Rebecca Austin, who's a mom from Central Illinois who has several children who have health insurance through the Medicaid program. Listeners, if you want to join our conversation, we'd love to hear from you about your experiences with this, 800-222-9455. And even private health insurance can be no cakewalk sometimes as well. If you want to share that story, 800-222-9455. So, Dr. Huang, I want to bring you back into the conversation. Can you talk about how does Medicaid compare to private insurance in trying to, you know, access medicines, get reimbursed, whatever, you know, things that physicians need to do when they have to interface through insurance providers?
Of course. My most direct experience is, again, from recently working in the hospital. So I was working in the hospital the last 2 weeks of July. And during that time, I can't remember what number of Medicaid patients I took care of. But during the course of 2 weeks, I had to, the hospital actually alerted me to five different cases where the Medicaid program had denied payment for the hospitalization. So in those five cases, they required me to, you know, sort of stop what I was doing, set aside time to have a peer-to-peer conversation with someone within the Medicaid, managed Medicaid program. So that's pretty disturbing because those five people, they all needed to be in the hospital for various acute, you know, medical reasons. What happens is we admit people to the hospital regardless of insurance, in part because of law, and because of ethics, we care for them. We, you know, but on the back end, we, you know, the hospital is investing time in sort of dealing with these insurance denials, but also, you know, the doctor's getting pulled into this too. So that's kind of my most recent experience. And of course, it's pretty revealing also the fact that, you know, our hospital system and my primary care practice at various times has accepted Medicaid, but at other times has not accepted Medicaid. And actually currently it does not accept Medicaid. And the disruption that creates is patients that we used to follow who had Medicaid, we have to fight tooth and nail to continue seeing them. But some of them are lost because of the changes in health insurance contracts between the hospital and the health system and Medicaid and Medicaid managed care. So it's a pretty, I would say, you know, at times burdensome, but a pretty disruptive, you know, Byzantine system at best to navigate.
Rebecca, how about that? Have you mentioned, you know, fighting to get medications covered, but what about finding doctors and specialists to treat your kids? Have you had issues with that or had to travel farther distances than you might have otherwise?
Yes. As a matter of fact, we traveled to St. Louis, which from my home is about 2.5 hours for my one child who has epilepsy. She also has to go to St. Louis. She does growth hormone injections due to a pituitary issue. And so we have to travel to St. Louis because there isn't anything local. We are actually getting ready to travel again to St. Louis for my son. He has some issues that have come about the last month or so, and there isn't a pediatric specialist that deals with that here. So we have to travel, if there is, they don't take the Medicaid card. And so that's been a huge struggle for us to find a doctor that will take care of the child, plus then that they will take the Medicaid.
Professor Gottlieb, I wonder if you can talk about this. I mean, your study points out this is an issue that happens with all health insurance plans, but it's something that's particularly bad with Medicaid. Why do you think that is?
It's a really good question. And I think there are two stories you can tell. I don't have concrete evidence on which it is, so I'll offer both and let you speculate. One possibility is that these burdens are all serving a purpose. And they may be helping to ensure that services aren't wasted, that they may be helpful for detecting or deterring fraud, or reducing overuse of medical care. That would be the justification, I suspect. Dr. Huang can talk about what happens in those conversations when he has to call the insurer to try to get coverage. But I suspect they are trying to push back and say, well, there's no evidence that this hospitalization was necessary medically or something like that. And he has to convince them otherwise, of course, using up a lot of his valuable time, not to mention all the administrative staff supporting him at the hospital. So that's one story. And of course, there must be truth to that at some level. If you just paid any claim that any hospital or doctor submitted, there would be rampant fraud. The question is, are these burdens, the way they are imposed, actually helpful for deterring fraud or detecting overuse? The other possibility is that it's just mismanagement, that the government is not functioning well, especially in Medicaid, which has more resource constraints and perhaps less of a political constituency than Medicare. So the elderly who generally are eligible for Medicare have a smoother time, according to our data. And that's based on how often we see denials and the costs that we estimate that doctors and their offices incur in dealing with these denials and trying to collect payment. So the one story would be that these burdens are all justified. Another is that the government is not well managed.
And there is some role of private companies in the management of the Medicaid program in Illinois, right? Do you think that, does that play a role in this?
Go ahead.
Yeah, I'm happy to jump in on that. So Illinois is actually a state, underwent a few years ago a major change, which is to shift from traditional Medicaid to Medicaid managed care. And that's where private insurers play a role. They essentially get money from Medicaid to manage and oversee. And so when we talk about Illinois Medicaid, you're actually talking about multiple programs within the Medicaid program in Illinois. And so a lot of the oversight comes from these managed care plans.
And Professor Gottlieb, I don't know if you wanted to weigh in on that as well.
Yeah, so that certainly is correct. And so you are adding another layer, and perhaps there's a stronger profit motive from the private insurers to deny claims so that they don't have to pay out as much money. But in an earlier paper, we found that the denials were actually higher in state-managed Medicaid programs than in when they are outsourced through managed care. And of course, the state is still overseeing or is supposed to be overseeing the managed care programs and making sure that their coverage is adequate. So it's true for sure that it's implemented through private insurers. But we see these major differences between private insurers treating Medicaid patients or covering Medicaid patients, I should say, versus private insurers in the commercial non-Medicaid market or the Medicare Advantage market. So something is very different between those markets, even with private insurers involved in all of them.
Interesting. Well, Dr. Huang, Professor Gottlieb had mentioned, you know, those phone calls with the companies. What are those phone calls like for you? What is the actual experience of arguing about do you hear, why did you even admit this person? They should have just been sent home. How do you handle that? What is that like?
Yeah, they're, you know, conversations with, insurance peers of, both in for Medicaid, but also for private insurance plans are, they can be a little contentious. These most recent calls I had, actually in one case, the peer just said, well, this person clearly was sick and we'll approve the admission. But at other times they will argue over how you approached a diagnosis, how you approached the use of a drug as Rebecca described. And so you're basically doing kind of hand-to-hand combat over evidence-based medicine. And, this all is, a reflection of a larger decision, kind of indirect decision that our country has made, which is to control costs at the level of individual decisions and not to make decisions at a central level or at a larger state or federal policy level on the control of healthcare costs. So everything's done kind of this at this hand-to-hand combat with between doctors, between patients and insurers, and that's what we're seeing play out in the Medicaid program.
Well, Professor Gottlieb, just a few minutes left in our conversation. What do you think needs to happen to improve this situation?
Let me, if I can just jump in response to Albert's comments there. What we did in this paper was to try to estimate exactly this process that he's talking about. So especially in the example where he has this phone call and the counterpart says, yeah, this patient was sick, we're going to approve this. That was a pure waste of everybody's time, right? They could have just approved it initially if it was so obvious. So it's clear that something is not working smoothly. And so what we do in the paper is we use the data on denial rates and on the doctor's office's decisions about how often to try to resubmit the claims to infer what they must be spending on these sorts of conversations. And so that's where we get our numbers about the very high costs of this process. But there are other costs still that we're not accounting for, such as those incurred by the insurance companies and by patients like Rebecca. What to do about it is a really hard problem. It depends on whether how much of this is actually valuable, as I was alluding to before, that if some of this is genuinely detecting or deterring fraud or overuse, then you can't simply say, well, you have to approve every claim. On the other hand, if there are a lot of drugs that are being denied and there's a lot of evidence, including some by some of my colleagues here at the University of Chicago, that drugs are that drugs can help avoid hospitalizations and reduce costs and improve health, and these arbitrary restrictions on prescriptions can be pretty damaging. That would suggest that a lot of this is just pure waste and hassle with serious side effects. So I don't know exactly what the solution is. Unfortunately.
Yeah, and we don't have another hour on the program, unfortunately. That's right. Dr. Huang, from your standpoint, I wonder what, or let me ask this, what happens, you mentioned you appeal a case, you appeal a denial. If it ultimately, if your appeal is unsuccessful, do the costs then get passed on to the patients themselves, or does the provider just absorb it?
Since we're talking about people who are low income, I suspect that a lot of these unpaid, unreimbursed services are probably just eaten by the hospital or the physician office or provider. And I think that's kind of what Josh's paper reveals, is that the issues with dealing with Medicaid create additional costs for providers. And if they're logical people, they'll know what they'll do. One thing to just mention, I mean, in terms of solutions, you know, one attempt to address this was part of the Affordable Care Act. They actually boosted primary care payments briefly in 2014 to Medicare levels to see if that would increase the adoption of Medicaid patients. And unfortunately, it was either not enough or not long enough, and it did not change doctor behavior. But, you know, the obvious solution is, you know, can we increase Medicaid payments? Which requires, you know, putting more state revenue, more federal revenue into the program.
Okay. Well,
I'm afraid we are
out of time there. We will have to, I'm sure this is a story we will continue to follow in the months and years ahead. I want to thank my guests. They have been Professor Gottlieb, Joshua Gottlieb from the University of Chicago's Harris School of Public Policy, co-author of the study we've been talking about, Dr. Albert Huang, Professor of Medicine and Public Health Sciences at UChicago, and Rebecca Austin, a Central Illinois mom who's some of whose children use Medicaid for their health insurance. I want to thank you all so much for being with us today on the 21st. And that is it for today's program. Before we go, I want to mention that the 21st is produced by Anna Casey and Ryan Wild. Our interns are Zainab Qureshi and Brielle Skullark. Technical direction and engineering come from Jason Croft and Steve Mork. Reginald Hardwick is our news director. The 21st is a production of Illinois Public Media. I'm Brian Mackey. We will talk to you again tomorrow. Thanks for listening.